Hello, this is Frankly Speaking, an informational exchange of problems and issues of relevance to people everywhere. Today's program addresses the subject of Black History Month. I'm Stephanie Hopkins for George Mason University. Black History Month is observed across the nation each year as a time to remember, learn about, and celebrate the ethnic roots and contributions of Afro-Americans in this country. The commemoration of Black history began in 1926, when Dr. Carter G. Woodson, a Harvard PhD and founder of the Association for the Study of Afro-American Life and History, established what was then known as Negro History Week. It was in 1972 that the name of Negro History Week was changed to Afro-American Black History Week. And then in 1976, the week was expanded to a month in order to provide more time for observances during the nation's bicentennial. The idea of celebrating the entire month has proved to be popular and has since been continued. To talk about this subject during the month of February, our first program, we will focus on Dr. John Jones, Chairman of the Accounting, Business, and Legal Studies in the School of Business Administration at George Mason University. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very kindly.
What I'd like to first do is give our audience a brief background of who John Jones is, where he's from, and why don't you tell us something about yourself?
Okay. I am a graduate of Howard University. I received my bachelor's degree there in 1967. I was a history major. I went on to law school at Howard University, and I received my Juris Doctorate degree in 1970. I then went on to the University of Pennsylvania, the Wharton Graduate School, where I was awarded my Master's in Business Administration in 1972. Since 1974, I have been in the academic area. I was an assistant professor and academic coordinator at the Pennsylvania State University in Middletown, Pennsylvania, and left there in 1978 to join the staff of the U.S. Commission on the International Year of the Child, where I was staff counsel and program coordinator. And then in 1979, joined the staff of the Select Commission on Immigration and Refugee Policy. I started here at George Mason in the spring of 1979 as an adjunct professor teaching business law at the undergraduate and graduate level, and then decided that I'd like to get back into academe on a full-time basis and joined the faculty here in September of 1980 as chairman of the Department of Accounting and Legal Studies.
Why does a black faculty member throughout the country decide to leave an urban environment, being in a city, and come to a rural area such as Fairfax, Virginia, and join up with a university such as George Mason University?
I think that there are some opportunities. I think a lot of the black faculty members in urban areas feel sort of burned out, overused. A university like George Mason with a new approach to things, particularly academic things, I feel is an opportunity to advance on a different level. I was not attracted to teaching in a large urban area, mainly because of considerations of my own satisfaction. I felt that I needed an environment that would offer me a chance to move in a different direction. I had practiced law for some years in Pennsylvania and had been rather active in what was going on in the city of Harrisburg for those same years. And I needed a break, an opportunity to come to a George Mason or any similar university, I think is a refreshing opportunity for a black faculty member. It gives them a different perspective, I think, on what's going on in academe, and it also develops those new techniques and new ideas with which we can go back to the other institutions. I'm not saying that I've given up on the idea of urban education altogether, but I think that there needs to be some new approaches, and I think that at a university like George Mason, we can develop some of those new approaches.
You mentioned the word opportunity. I'm wondering why opportunity would not knock for an individual of your credentials at a Georgetown or a George Washington or possibly at Antioch, somewhere that is located within the city or the District of Columbia, where their name is known. George Mason is not exactly the most well-known university in this metropolitan Washington area.
Right. Well, by the fact that it's not well-known, I think it offers these unique opportunities. The mere fact that it is located near an urban center, yet as far as students are concerned, really doesn't compete with the urban universities. It offers a chance to try some new things. It offers a chance to spread your wings, so to speak, and get involved in something new. George Mason, because of its age, because of its location, serves a rather unique student population. As we see the cities retracting, as we see students from the inner city wanting to move on to different things, the new universities like George Mason are going to be in the forefront of developing new ideas and new programs.
There has also been the criticism that smaller universities or less well-known colleges and universities cannot compete with the salary differentials.
That's true. I don't think that academic institutions can compete on a salary level at all with private industry or even in this area with the government. But I think that when you take a position at an institution, particularly if you've done any kind of professional practice at all, you realize that there is a salary sacrifice. That really doesn't bother the instructor who has something else in mind.
What do you see as setting role models for the black youth of today? What is of prime importance, and what do we need to prove to the youth that are currently in our educational institutions?
Well, I think the mere fact that you are there offers some credence to the fact that blacks can achieve a certain level. The other problem I see is keeping things in perspective. Realizing that you might have attained a certain level, but not really forgetting where you came from. But by the same token, offering the black student in particular something to shoot for and showing him that it's not a situation anymore where he can simply hold his hand out and be given, but that he must work and that he must strive and through his own abilities and with the help of others, naturally. Hopefully he will be able to achieve some level of success, and I think that we don't really want to serve as total role models, but just as the model which lets that student know that the opportunities are there, and that if he plays the game according to the rules, that it's possible that he can also achieve some level of success. I think it's a question of showing them that that they can do it. Mm-hmm. That they don't need to be superstars on the gridiron or the athletic floors, but that with hard work and with perseverance and with a belief that they have some self-worth, that they can achieve what it is they want to achieve. Now, you know, in terms of what definitions of success are, each one probably has his own definition of success or her definition of success. But I think that the mere fact that we are at a place like George Mason lets them know that there are opportunities. The mere fact that we have achieved some certain degree of professionalism lets them know that it is possible. The mere fact that we treat them as adults and not give grades away, for example, leads them on and makes them work because they're going to need that later on.
You mentioned giving grades away. Mm-hmm. That happens to be of prime concern. In fact, the president here at George Mason University, Dr. George Johnson, feels as though any student, be it black or white, but particularly the black athlete. Mm-hmm. George Mason does not want to attract the black athlete who is not also an achiever academically. And so we want to strive for individuals, be them black or white, who have some academic criteria, first of all, and then their athletic aptitude would be a secondary consideration.
Right. I agree with Dr. Johnson 100%. I think that with all the scandal and with the problems that major universities have faced over the years, and with recent disclosures about the inabilities of certain athletes and blacks in particular to achieve academic success, that that's a good approach to take. George Mason, by being so young, can certainly learn from the mistakes of other institutions.
You are currently chairman of the Department of Accounting and Business Legal Studies. That is not an area that blacks have necessarily pursued in the past or even excelled in.
Right. That's true. I think that as we look back over our history in this country, those highly technical, number-related or legal fields, that we were not encouraged to enter the highly technical fields. I think that this area, the area of business administration and accounting and law, offers a real opportunity for blacks and a real opportunity for women. The old boy network do exist, and I think that everyone must be aware of that, but I think that this is one area in which we can stress competence and professionalism. And you don't need to be a part of that old boys network in order to become a competent professional. You can do it on your own. You can achieve success on the CPA exam. You can go to law school and achieve success in passing the bar examinations. And therefore, you will have achieved some professional status on your own. Now, granted, it's difficult. It takes work, and it takes sacrifice, and it takes time. And I think that with the new push that we have on here at George Mason, we hope to attract as many minority students and women into the field as we possibly can. It's an area that I feel, in terms of my teaching experience and professional background, is wide open. Mm.
Could you define for me exactly what is business legal studies?
Business legal studies is sort of a subsection of what we refer to normally as business law. It is not designed to give the student background to go to law school, but it is designed to supplement and to be a major part of most of the courses that he's going to take in the School of Business Administration. As he moves on into a graduate position, or as he moves on into professional businesses or corporations or what have you, each business student or each person in the business community should have at least a working knowledge of the law.
You have been a legal consultant in the past, mm-hmm. and you have practiced law.
Right.
I'm wondering, what advice would you give a student who is considering going into law school?
I would, if that student is at the college level now, advise him to try to get decent grades. I think that in today's world, as far as the competition for law school admittance is concerned, he is going to need at least a B average to get into your better law schools. I would advise him to develop communication skills, reading and writing in particular. Normally, it would also mean doing well on the law school admissions test, the LSAT, and a combination of activities at the undergraduate level to give law school admission committees enough background to show that the student is well-rounded.
Any last-minute comments in reference to Black History Month?
As a history major in undergraduate school, I've always participated and enjoyed Black History Month, and I would advise everyone, blacks and others alike, to look back at the contribution that blacks have made to this country. It's an awful large segment of this country's history that we, in the past, have been left out of. And I think it's a very interesting segment of history, and hopefully someone will bring that forward in the years to come.
George Mason does have an extensive list of events taking place during the month of February. For further information about these things that are taking place, you may call 323-2138. I'd like to thank Pat Ping, our production coordinator for this program. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public affairs program produced by George Mason University. I'm Stephanie Hopkins for the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.